May I officially declare this meeting opened. Today is a continuation of public hearings on the division of revenue bill. And according to the program, there were some departments invited to make submissions which have confirmed number one on our list was supposed to be Department of Human Settlement, they are not here. Department of Public Works, they are not here. As well as Department of Health. I'm told Department of Health, they are somewhere in another meeting elsewhere. They did not want to, Public Works, they did not want to share their delegation into two so that others address the NA, others come here. I don't know what is their intention, but nevertheless, honorable members, apart from those presentations, other departments, they did not indicate whether they will arrive late or not, or they are coming or not coming at all. We don't know. So maybe honorable members will guide me on that. Apart from that, honorable members, there's only one submission that we also received from the Cape Bar Council. To be precise, from the Parliamentary Committee of General Councils of the Bar of South Africa. So they are only making two comments. I don't know if a copy was made for, but seeing it's only one copy, I will just say it's just a brief thing. They are making reference to clause 11, subsection clause 11(2)(a)(1). And they are saying it is not clear what is meant in the context by the words exclusively appropriate. I hope members will have their bill with them. Otherwise, copies are there, the Bekenu, the secretary. Clause 11 of the bill, 11(2)(a)(1), which reads, the receiving officer of the municipality must ensure and certify to the National Treasury that the municipality, one, indicates or, if required, exclusively appropriates each program funded or partially funded by this allocation in its annual budget. So they are saying in context, it is not clear what is meant by exclusively appropriate. I think Treasury will reflect on that, and then we can engage from there. And then the other point relates to page 10 of the bill. The bill is the front pages of that thick document. The rest at the back are just attachments. And then they are saying clause 25. Clause 25, which is on the page. Page 19, yes. Clause 25, 1A. It says municipality, the remaining municipality from which a particular area is transferred at the commencement of or through the implementation of legislation which redemarcates municipal boundaries and addresses associated matters must continue to spend its allocation for 2011-12 financial year made in terms of this act in that particular municipality, in that area or municipality, as if that area was not transferred to another municipality. Unless the affected municipality have entered into an agreement that ensures that the relocated area or municipality is not negatively affected. So their input is on that part that is negatively affected. It's, they are saying here, although the wording in this regard has probably been deliberately chosen, particularly given the safety net and policing measures provided by clause 25(1)(b) and C, it is suggested that the words negatively affected in clause 25(1)(a) could be seen as bordering on the unacceptably vague. This in turn leaves somewhat in the air the nature and content of the agreement to be entered into in such circumstances by the affected municipality, as mentioned earlier in the provision. So, those are the two inputs from the Bar Council, that committee. The first one to me is at least more clearer than the second one. Advocate Mulan, can you clarify me on the next one? Can I give you this thing? You can read and clarify what is meant. It's written in a legal. Honorable Masilo wanted to make an input.
No, I actually just wanted us to discard this second comment of theirs because I think it is misunderstanding the drafting that is here. The way Clause 25.1A has been drafted is 100% correct, given the situation that we are coming from the cross-border municipalities where we had problems of areas that were demarcated into a new municipality. And those that are releasing municipalities then stopped almost all the work in that particular area, whereas they are holding the budget for that particular area. And this provision that we are speaking to now, it actually deals with that. And it says that if ever the two municipalities have got any agreement, that agreement must not actually make that particular area to suffer. So this has been crafted 100% correctly. I would recommend that we just throw that second comment of theirs into the dustbin. Probably we can look at that first one that you're talking about. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Mashile. Advocate?
No, I think what the Honourable has said, he understood the interpretation. I think what they may be saying is clarify negatively, but if you read it within the context of the budget allocation, negatively would mean let the municipality not suffer, as the Honorable said. They just, what they are trying to say is clarify negatively affected.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Then can we, are we all in agreement with the suggestion by Honorable Mashile? Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The first clause then, Wendy, would you want to say something on that one?
This is a very easy one, sir. Yes. Exclusively appropriated means one thing in terms of legislation and means it may not be used for anything else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So, are we happy with that explanation, Honourable Members? And now the other part that I wanted us to go through whilst we are waiting for this department, if they will ever come, is the submission made yesterday, which seeks to propose certain additions to some areas of the bill, particularly certain attachments, particularly on the conditional grants. I'll refer you to those submissions by Mr. Paul Theron. I take the note that yesterday there was a commitment that some of this would be bounced with the department's consent. But I'm not sure, Wendy, if you did have as treasurer now some time to reflect or have a view on these submissions without maybe involving those other departments, but just to get a view from treasurer, or we should allow that process to take place and you will give us submissions as we continue engaging on the document itself.
Thank you. With regard to the proposals made, maybe the relationship between the EPWP infrastructure grant and the infrastructure grants need to be seen. How the EPWP grant works is that if you actually create a number of job opportunities and you actually exceed the given benchmark that's set for you, then you qualify for incentive. And what that means, you've actually employed more people than what actually currently on the table and what the target was. So that's how the incentive grant means. So it's all linked to job creation. Where does that get measured? It gets measured through the infrastructure grants and infrastructure spending. So the EPWP grant actually already provides for that. So it will just be a duplication. It's not necessary to put it in there. We can consider it, but it will add no value because it's already contained in the EPWP program that actually measures how the infrastructure programs are rolled out.
Okay, thanks for that clarity once more, Wendy. So, honourable members, I have indicated that I would need your guidance because the people who are supposed to be here are not here.
Honorable Chairperson, just a practical thing. Can the Secretary just do a telephone follow-up to see who is coming? Because we've got other work to do as well. If let me know what the program for the morning will be.
Yeah, Chairperson, when you... speaking to the departments that are coming here, I think I was just half a minute in the room, and I may not have heard it correctly, but I've heard you referring to human settlements, public works, and I think to a certain extent you also mentioned health, that they are not here. But now, yes, but in relation to human settlements and public works, the program I'm having, it shows that they are expected somewhere around 11 or half past 11. And probably that, if they have this particular program, and then they may have decided to come at that particular time. And definitely I will agree with Comrade De Beer on health and basic education. If all of them are not here, that... a phone call to establish their whereabouts. It would assist us to be able to move forward. Thanks.
Yeah, unless the secretary has got... But the information I have is that all people or departments that come here are all expected to arrive here at 9. There's no specific department that is told that, no, you must come at 12 or at 11 or what. They are all told that we are starting at 9 and they should all be here at 9. Because quite often we might make amendments to the program itself. So they don't have a program, so to say, to answer you straight. The only department that has indicated that they are going to arrive a little bit late because they are addressing the portfolio committee is Public Works and Advice. So they are waiting first to present that side, and then after presenting, they are the department that refused to send another delegation this side and another that side. They want to move as a group. But the other point that I need to highlight, honorable members, which I also raised with the secretary and which I will take up with management, is that some of the departments were departments that were invited directly. They were not responding to our advert or invitation like we did. They are not coming voluntarily, so to say, which I think sometimes it's like inviting them to make presentation when they don't have anything to present. But it's something that I said I will take up with management of the committee section because I'm told it is their instruction that they should invite them in that particular fashion. Rural Development have already submitted an apology that they could not come yesterday because of failures in their systems, and the minister is attending the cabinet lekhotla, not lekhotla, the cabinet meeting today. Well, you know, it's the cabinet day today, so most ministers should be attending there. But we'll wait to hear the secretary feedback from the follow-up he's going to make, as you have directed.
Yeah.
But
Comrade Chair,
a different view.
Yeah, Comrade Chair, is, you know, we hear all the rhetoric in the NCOP from relevant ministers that they appreciate to be called to the NCOP and they'll work together with the NCOP, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, in their own administrations, in their departments, that is not the thing that they are communicating. This thing has been a long-standing problem that the department actually prioritizes the National Assembly more than the NCOP. It's a long time thing, which probably abusing the presence of the deputy chair of the house to really ensure that, you know, to request that the administrations of the department should have the same consciousness like their own ministers, because those DGs and the directors, when they have to speak to the NCOP, you know, there is no agency, there is no vigor, there is no energy. It's a long thing of NCOP. It's a long thing, but although many people are trying to do their best over it, to deal with it, but it remains an unresolved situation all the way. Thanks.
Honourable members, will then have a short 10-minute break whilst we are waiting for the secretary. Thank you. May you so long have some tea. No, and I was saying let's start here with our proceedings. And remember, the feedback I'm getting is that we just got a call now. The basic education, they are saying they will not be coming because the minister is presenting the bill in the MA. So as a result of that, they will not come. There was public works is still in the other committee in the National Assembly, and health, we don't know. All we know is that the minister would not be coming himself because he's attending the cabinet as well. But the DG was to come, but they are not yet here. So, yeah, Muswale is attending, he has submitted an apology. He'll be attending the... No, he's attending the cabinet. Then the basic education, the PLO is saying they will not be coming because they are presenting a bill before a committee in the NA, and public works is also still in the NA as well. There's no word from him, certainly.
Mr. Joe, no, it's Adam Tobin, the PLO.
They
didn't indicate anything with respect to the Honorable Minister, but what they told me is that they are going to appear before the State Committee on Appropriations. So hence, I moved them to 12 o'clock on my program.
members, I want to suggest that for those that were to come, because they are not here, we will follow up and then get them to make written submissions if they do have submissions. Then we, because I don't see us sitting here until 12 o'clock waiting for people. I think we've got other things to attend. Honorable Memela and Honorable Mashila.
With all due respect to you, Chairperson, I would then propose that letters are written to those respective members voicing out a dissatisfaction and stating it clearly that we shouldn't be treated as second-hand component. We are part of Parliament. It's very crucial that they honor the invitation, and we really want even the explanations in black and white.
Okay. On the proposal?
We are within 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah, Chair, I think in terms of the money bill, the shortened version of that long name, Chair, is that we don't have the luxury of time. We don't have the luxury of time, and therefore, one would suggest that we may not misuse our time to pursue any input from them. Instead of a report on their input, then it becomes the paragraph that talks to this situation that we are not happy about. We indicate clearly in the report that they were invited, but they prioritized to go to committees of the NA other than ourselves. And then we raise those concerns. And we take for granted that they have disadvantaged themselves to actually influence our final decision on the division of revenue. And the second part that the deputy chair has raised in terms of communicating to their masters and responses within specific time, I think that I'm supporting that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think we'll right away work on those letters to the respective ministers with regard to what has transpired today. And may I just remind honourable members that we are going to be meeting again next week on the 29th and the 30th to deal with the mandates from the provinces. And on the 6th, it will be during the recess period, we'll be expected to meet again on the 6th to reflect on the final mandate and the draft report, which will be adopted on the 13th of April. So, on that note, honourable members, I think I just want to check something, honourable members. I think my understanding with regard to the previous meeting was that we are going to call for debate on the division of revenue, or should it just be a statement? I need to, because I think in terms of the last discussion, it was like we wanted to go for debate on the machine.
Yeah, Chair, I think because this division of revenue is mainly provincial mandate, and as we have done it in, I think it was in Bergersfort the other time, I think a debate, I think, will be a thing, and we must make sure that we call those relevant colleagues from the provinces to come and take part and do the work. That's what I would suggest, that we have a debate.
And I will be
I support that proposal specific from my province. There's a serious case coming over 16 years regarding the division of revenue, and they requested to come and debate.
Can you come in if you're not lost? Mayor Chopping Department is this. We are just about to close our meeting.
Monitor?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Health Department. We got lost. We went to 315 that side, and our DG will be joining us as per the program because it said health will present at 11:30.
Where is she now?
She's in the office.
Can you call her because we are about to close our meeting?
Yes, sir.
You're just lucky that I was still attending to other things before. Otherwise, you'd have
missed us. Found you gone.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll call her, Chair.
Please,
thank
we can't
you.
Wait
okay.
for 11 o'clock, unfortunately.
Okay, sir.
I think what we'll do, we'll then advise the Office of the Chief about the fact that we'll be debating so that the necessary arrangements are done with provinces, including the number of speakers on the 13th of April, yes. Hmm? No, the 13th.
Richard, you're 100% correct, but when I went through the parliamentary program, I saw it was dated the 12th, and I don't know where that mix-up came, because our program was approved, submitted, went through all the processes. You're 100% correct for the 13th. I don't know how the 12th came up. I don't know.
I think I'll take it up with the committee whip, who's also proclaiming whip. Because there's been a lot of confusion on the program this lately. But it is definitely when we come back from recess, the first recess. So the debate will be in that particular plenary. Honourable Mashina.
I'm not sure how much of our responsibility will that be, is to ensure that all the provinces and the relevant persons come and debate on that. Not to have an excuse where you find that in another province is an MEC of finance comes and talk to us, another province is a chairperson of a committee of finance, another one they've just sent somebody to comply. If we could really be clear on who is relevant to this particular matter of the Division of Revenue and try and persuade them to come and debate. Because when we go around with the provinces, we get a lot of problems where people are querying certain, especially you'll remember with the equitable share formulas and all that. You've got differential attack to it. It's not concerted that people that are talking to it are from the same mind and the same understanding how this thing affects them. People just from personal understandings, and then they raise these particular problems as we are moving across. If we could get the relevant people from the provinces that should come and debate, if it is chairpersons of the finance committees, or then let it be those. If it is the ministers of finance or the MECs of finance in the relevant provinces, in accordance with their responsibilities, we should persuade them to come like that so that they come and talk to these issues. Because if they talk to these issues as well, it is some sort of capacity building across all the provinces. When they go back, they'll be knowing what other provinces are saying about this particular thing, and then they take the things back. But if they send, you know, disjuncted personnel from the provinces where one sends an MEC, another one is a chairperson, another one is just is the chief whip who wants to go to Cape Town on holidays, it doesn't serve the purpose. Thanks.
My point taken, I don't remember. The message will be put to the secretary as invitations are circulated out. Honourable members, in light of the new developments now, health is here. We will unfortunately be lenient to allow them to make presentation, but I'm not sure how far is their head. Okay.
Maybe on the lighter note, before we start with health, probably, if I'm not confused, I think the lady that went out, I think is the DG. It's not the DG for health. Yeah, what I just wanted to say is that maybe you should communicate this arrangement, because they're still going to come into other meetings, that when the public hearings are starting at 9, even though that they may, for some reason, access a program that tells them that they are going to present at 11, it doesn't mean that they are going to come at 11. They still have to come exactly at 9 to be part of the proceedings. I think if that can be communicated to them, because I'm just worried that when we're speaking about somebody who's coming later because it's going to only entertain us around 11, it indicates to me that particular principle of coming exactly when the meeting starts is not really with them. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mashile. Ma'am?
Thank you, Chairperson. The point is noted, Chair. We actually really wanted to be on time. We just we got lost that night and we had to find this new venue. We actually said with education, literally, and we thought we were in the right meeting because education comes before us, until we realized that they're presenting the strategic plan, and then we had to come out and find out where the select committee is. But the point is taken, sir. In future, we will comply.
Thanks, ma'am. Although you're still late because your head is still in the office. So if she was not in that meeting, it means you would still not present in her absence. But it's fine. It's we'll raise it with her as soon as she arrives so that it doesn't happen going forward. Honorable Lamelo.
Chairperson, still be reminded of the proposal that was put forward. We're not withdrawing it at all.
We'll have again another short 5 minute break. We'll with our meeting, we have now been joined by Department of Health and Human Settlement. And may I indicate to the both departments that we were almost closing the meeting 15 minutes ago because there was no one to present. And whilst I take note of the fact that you might have looked at the program as to where, what time are you presenting, but the actual reality is that when we say the meeting starts at 9, we expect all departments to be here at 9, irrespective of whether you present at 1 or what. Because if presenters before you are short, we cannot, at the end of whoever presenting, wait for 12 o'clock for it to work for another department. It doesn't work that way. It's just a matter of courtesy to circulate the program. But we expect departments, so I'm saying in future, even if you are to present at 1 or 2, when the meeting starts at 9, you expect that to come at 9. It's not like in the house itself where normally ministers will be sensitized that you'll be expected to speak at this particular time. Because always the minutes differentiation there will be less than what happens here. So I earlier on read an apology from Human Settlement. So we are not expecting you, but subsequent to your own apology, you are here. But we appreciate you being here anyway. We did receive an apology from health indicating that the minister is attending the cabinet and members also will be leading the delegation. And I was just trying to amplify that matter of time so that we are clear going forward. Because we had already earlier on taken a resolution to raise the matter up with your relevant principal. And that particular decision stays there in terms of the resolve of the honorable members. So without any waste of time, we will take a presentation on the Division of Revenue Bill from the Department of Health. Members.
For the confusion, it is not meant to be disrespect on our part. It was just an understanding that the time that was allocated would be the time that we present, and we've noted the concerns. I would like to start, Honourable Chair and Members, with the introduction that during the medium time frame, framework, the department had requested additional funding for both national and provincial departments for the amount of about 19.9 billion. And Cabinet and Treasury approved an amount of 18 billion, which is broken up into 3.4 billion for national health and 14.6 for provinces, mainly earmarked funding in line with the priority areas that are part of the negotiated service delivery agreement. Just by way of background, the expenditure trends of the department have been such that there's been growth from 13.6 billion in the financial year 07-08 to 23.1 billion in the financial year 2010-11. And this reflects an average annual growth rate of about 19.4%. Over the medium term period, expenditure is expected to grow to up to 30.1 billion at an average annual rate of about 9.2%. The increase in both periods has been largely driven by transfers to provinces for conditional grants, with the main increase mainly being in the HIV/AIDS, because with the heightened ACT campaign, we're likely to get more people who had not known their status will be on treatment. But in particular, because the threshold has been changed of CD4, at which people can be introduced for treatment, it has been increased from 200 to 350. So there's going to be more people put on treatment. Secondly, the revitalization of hospital grants is also one particular area that has seen growth, as well as the National Tertiary Services Grant. And I would like to say that for the National Tertiary Services Grant is mainly because there's with the projections that we see for the number of health workers that are needed, would like to see the tertiary institutions increase their capacity to produce and train more health workers, particularly doctors and nurses. And secondly, because we're going to be revitalizing our nursing colleges, we also anticipate that this is going to be a necessary funding, particularly for these institutions. The Forensic Pathology Services Grant will be phased out in the financial year 2012-13 and will be included in the provincial equitable share allocation. With regard to the MTEF allocation for 2011-12 to 2013-14, the budget includes allocations of 442 million in 2011-12 and 692 million for 2012-13 and 2.2 billion for 2013-14. And the program allocation, just by way of background, share the totals. I'll just refer to the totals and I'll explain
the programmatic approach that you are following. The total for 2010-12 will be 22,219,000,000, and for 11-12 will be 25,732,000,000, and for 12-13 will be 27,611,000,000, and 30 for the final 13-14. Here, because of the identified priority areas, there's been recognition that historically we've been rating infrastructure without doing health facility planning and also strengthening health systems. So we have, on the basis of the service delivery agreement outputs that has been signed by the minister and the president, that identified four key output areas: that of increasing life expectancy, reduction of maternal and child mortality rates, as well as decreasing the burden of HIV and TB, revitalizing primary healthcare services, as well as strengthening our institutional response by building our health workforce. So our programs reflect that, and they've been, as a result, designed accordingly. So this is, if you reflect and you look back at how our programs were designed, we specifically designed them to respond to the priority areas that form part of the service delivery agreement. The next presentation is about the allocation according to economic classifications, and the compensation of employees will increase, and this is mainly for National Department of Health, from 385 in 10-11, 424 in 11-12, 465 in 12-13, and 492 in 13-14. One of the particular areas that we hope to increase capacity is in the area of the Office of Standard Compliance, which will be created in terms of the Amendment Act that is being proposed. And lastly, because we'd like to increase the quality in our facilities, particularly in hospitals, infection control, as well as cleanliness of hospitals, because these are the key problems that we've had. For goods and services, it will also increase from 755 to 785 up to 830 in 1314. For the grants, the total transfers and subsidies will be 21 billion in 10-11 and 24.489 billion in 11-12, and 12-13 it will be 26.316 billion, and in 13-14 it will be 28.778 billion. For payment of capital assets, it will just be a minimal amount of 45 million, 33, 35, and 37 for these respective years. So the totals I've already referred to earlier. I'd like to then refer to the conditional grants, particularly for the financial year 2011-12. The Department of Health is responsible for oversight for the following conditional grants. The first is the comprehensive HIV/AIDS grant. Because of the comorbidity shared between HIV and TB, in this financial year, and I think the most important thing is that TB is a killer, and we also have MDR-TB. And if we do not put our lead on this one, we are really, really going to head for serious, serious problems as a country. It is for that reason, Chair, that we've also captured some elements of this comorbidity and ability to help provinces respond to the comorbidity of HIV-TB, but also to scale up our efforts to improve HIV/AIDS HCT campaign, to get as many people tested as much as possible, not only for HIV, but also for tuberculosis. So for us to have an effective response, we'd like to make targeted support in this particular area. For the Forensic Pathology Services Grant, Chair, we'll continue
the development and provision of adequate forensic pathology services in all provinces. This is the grant that will be phased out in the next financial year. The health infrastructure grant, Chair, like I said, that the nursing colleges need to be revitalized. We have finished an audit, and there's a total of 105 colleges that need to be revitalized and improved. And those also include accommodation for nurses. So to supplement provincial funding of health infrastructure and also to accelerate provision of health facilities and their proper maintenance, we've also been allocated this particular grant. The next one, Chair, I've already explained, for the health professions training and development grant for training of health professionals. We need to scale up the number of health workers that we have, including our specialists. This is not just only about training, it's also about development and recruitment of specialists as well as registrars. We've got a vacancy rate of about 1,200 registrars. For as long as we have those vacancies, it means we will not have enough specialists for the future, because registrars are entry point for becoming specialists. So we have targeted and also earmarked funding that we requested for this purpose. For the hospital revitalization grant, it is also to create a proper program of infrastructure and support, not just through this grant, but also grants that are allocated at provincial level. And it is in this respect that I would like to say, Chair, that we have, and it's also based on previous presentations that we had, where you specifically mentioned that we needed to scale up and increase our monitoring and oversight role. We have signed an agreement for this purpose with CSIR and DBSA, for them to make available experts from their institutions to help us to provide more targeted support to provinces and for better management of this grant. National Tertiary Services Grant, I had already mentioned earlier about our efforts to increase not only the provision of tertiary services, but also to ensure that those tertiary services, because they are our training institutions, also meet certain standards. Because if they don't have equipment that work, if they don't have facilities that meet certain standards, it means they will compromise the training and support of our health workers. So in terms of allocations of these grants, Chair, for 2011-12 to 2013-14, the health infrastructure grant for the year 2011-12 will be 1.7 billion, and for 2012-13 is 1.82 billion, and for 2013-14 will be 1.9. In total, for the MTEF period, it will be just over 5.4 billion. For the health professions and development training, Chair, it will be 1.977 billion. For the year 2011-12, for 2012-13, it will be just over 2 billion, and for 2013-14, about 2.2 billion. National Tertiary Services, it will be 8 billion, and for the next financial year will be 8.688 billion. For 2013-14, it will be 9.389. HIV/AIDS and TB will be 7.5 for 2011-12, approximately 7.492, and for 2012-13 it will be 8.824, and for 2013-14 will be 10.606 billion. Forensic pathology, the allocation will only be for the financial year 2011-12. The rest will be allocated in the provincial equitable share. And the hospital revitalization grant will be 4.136 billion for the first financial year. And in 2012-13 will be 4.335. For 2013-14 will be 4.067 shared. In total, it will be about 12 over the MTE period.
And the total for the MTEF period will be 77.869 billion for all the conditional grants. Share the breakdown for each of the grants per province. For Eastern Cape, for the first financial year, it will be 299.754. And for 2012-13, will be 327.673. And for 2013-14, will be 345.695. Free State, a share will be 129.621 for the first financial year, and the next financial year will be 141.911. For 2013-14 will be 149.716. Gauteng share will be 142.694. For 2012-13 will be 157.434. And for 2013-12 will be 166.093. For KwaZulu-Natal, it will be 358.471, 393.367. And for the last financial year 2013-14 will be 415.002. For Limpopo chair, it will be 270.802. I beg your pardon. For 2012-13 will be 267.888. For 2013-14 will be 282.622. For Mpumalanga, for 2011-12 it will be 146.368. For 2012-13 will be 143.383, and for 2013 will be 151.269. For Northern Cape, it will be 89.541 in the first financial year. For 2012-13, it will be 98.258, and for 2013-14, it will be 103.662. For Northwest, it's 145.466. For 2012, 159.656, and for 2013-14 will be 168.437. Western Cape, honorable members, will be 119.17. For 2012-13 will be 131.411, and 2013-14, 138.638. So the total for each of the financial year, I have already referred to earlier. For AIDS, Chair, the breakdown is also in accordance with the burden of disease. And you'll see that for some of the provinces, there's quite a significant, and also the number of patients who are on treatment. For Gauteng, Chair, as you can see, it's 1.6, but KZN has the highest burden of disease, it's 1.77. For the first financial year, and for the next financial year, it's 2.329, and the next year, 2.799. And it is in this respect that I refer to this, but it's also because our ACT campaign is also revealing that out of the total number of people who have been tested, we've had contact with 10 million people who have been pre-cancelled. Of those, 7 million have been tested. 18% of these need treatment, and as we test more people and we increase the number, more people are going to have to be put on treatment. So this grant will help us facilitate that. But as we do that, we also will be detecting more patients with tuberculosis and would like to also ensure that also TB patients, not just TB, but also those with MDR-TB, will be put on treatment as soon as possible. For forensic pathology services, Chair, like I said, it is only for the financial year 2011-12 that allocation has been made as a grant. The rest of the other funding for the subsequent years will be included in the equitable share. The hospital revitalization grant, the total for 2011-12 with a breakdown for each province is 4.136 billion for the first financial year. And for the second financial year, in 2012-13, it will be 4.335.908. And for 2013-14, it will be 4.066.859. So, those are the breakdowns per province. I will not repeat them. For health professions training and development grant, for 2012-13,
for the first financial year, it will be 2011-12. We hope to actively recruit doctors, and maybe just to say that for the nurses, Chair, we are having a nursing summit a week after next, and at this summit we will then look at how we revamp and reorganize nursing training, because it has been over a number of years it was changed from being a bedside training, which is experiential, to be purely academic. So we're bringing those service elements of nursing, and I think this is going to help us do that. And as we revitalize our colleges, we'll also bring back those elements. Now, if we're bringing back in-service training, it means we must prepare ground in our facilities to ensure there's a certain level of readiness for our facilities to be used as a training ground for nurses, as we used to do in the past. For national tertiary services, these are mainly chair for those institutions that have academic institutions, particularly tertiary institutions. And if you check the allocation, you'll notice, honorable members, that Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape, because they've got tertiary institutions that train medical personnel, as well as Free State has university, or Free State and Eastern Cape. They have a significant share because they have specialists who train, but they also are institutions that provide training. So the allocations are reflected then for 2011-12, 2012-13, and 2013-14. So just to try and refer to the DORA share, for these grants, there are Schedule 4 grants as well as a Schedule 5. And those that are Schedule 4 are the National Tertiary Services, Health Professions Training and Development, Forensic Pathology Services. Because these grants cannot be withheld, we are pleased that we do have a provision within the Division of Revenue grant that allows for 5% withholding while interventions are put in place. We are working on a proposal, Chair, to improve these grants and their performance. Both the National Tertiary Services and the Health Professions Training and Development, specifically to deal with improving services where training, particularly those facilities where training is provided. For Schedule 5, Chair, the grants are HIV/AIDS, the Hospital Revitalization Grant. These are grants that may be withheld for non-performance and or non-compliance. And these require that there should be interventions in place. Chair, for information, we've just added some information about some earmark funds that were allocated to provinces. And these are allocations, some of which, Chair, were supposed to assist us to prepare for the introduction of national health insurance, to get our facilities to a certain level of readiness. The second purpose, Chair, for these EMF funds was also to help us to move with speed to meet our Millennium Development Goals. South Africa has to be at a certain level by 2015. So in preparation for that, we needed targeted funding and support to be able to achieve this. Like I said, Chair, it's also about a nursing college upgrading, but some of the funding is also included in the infrastructure grant. Chair, I would just like to reflect a bit about the OSD earmark funding. This is an area of concern for us, in that
the manner in which OSD funding, earmarked as it is, has been allocated to provinces, has been in accordance to equitable share. We find that to be problematic. Problematic because it is supposed to be informed by headcount. You have a certain number of doctors and specialists in a province, and that allocation should then be in accordance with those numbers. If you use equitable share, it doesn't take into account that you have these numbers. Our concern is that in an effort for us to prepare for the training and increase in the number of doctors and nurses that we need and other allied health professionals, we're likely to run into problems, particularly from the manner in which the equitable share has been applied for OSD. Our view is that OSD should not be allocated in accordance with equitable share, and perhaps we can be guided on how best this should be done, because we are worried that it may not achieve what was intended. Chair, for the next group, like I said, it's for different teams, and I've already said it's for MDGs to prepare for a preparatory work for NHI, including getting our hospitals to a certain level of readiness. Our hospital has to meet certain norms and standards. Those norms and standards have been developed, and the Office of Standard Compliance will start inspecting and accrediting facilities to ensure that they meet those standards, including ensuring that they've got infection control in place, they're clean, there are no long lines, and the health workers conduct themselves in a certain way, particularly the attitude of health workers, which has been a key concern for patients and the public. So these are the funds that are supposed to help us, and the long queues and the fact that some of our patients go to facilities and they do not get their medicines, they're told to come back the next day. So this additional funding is supposed to help us to improve those conditions. So, Chair, this is in summary what is presented. If there's any other information, I can make that available. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Before we come to questions for clarity, I will allow Human Settlement, to present, then we can take questions for both departments. Questions for Department of Health, if we have any honorable members. Honorable DPR, Honorable Marcile Makoveno.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Also, thank you to the department for their presentation. Just a few proposals, which is practical proposals. the vacancies for specialists, etc. I would recommend to the chairperson that this department embark on a recruitment exercise to high schools in this country to go and recruit students to go and study in the health sector. Well, I am deployed through my political organization. We did precisely that and took the best reforms to the high schools, got the list of names and submitted it to the MEC for health in the Northern Cape. MEC Honorable Chukacha. And they have students that are enrolled. And that will happen year after year. The other point comes to the monitoring and oversight role of the department. Yes, it must be scrutinized and beefed up, especially with your regional directors in the different regions in the specific provinces, the 9 provinces. They like to stay on tar roads and not travel on gravel roads. That you also make use of the members of parliament. We are all deployed to different geographical areas. And we said this last year as well, when we had the same meeting on the 2010-11 Division of Revenue Bill. Get an on-site report through the specific committee, in this case the Select Committee on Appropriations, as well as the Select Committee for Health, and submit that report to the Minister of Health. You can cover the whole country in 14 days because it's constituency periods we are going to run into now, and it can be part of the election campaign to visit the institutions in the different areas. So it is possible. It can be done. You refer to a nurses summit. When is this?
From the 5th to the 7th of April.
I missed that. Then on the OSD funds earmarked through the equitable share, if I heard you correctly, what is, you have a wish list, but what do you need? What is your proposal to us, to this committee? Because now you've got the opportunity to put your cash. What do you need? Because myself and all the chairperson, Chani serves in the Budget Council. With the Minister, MEC for Finance, and a minister. That's where we discuss this. But the cake is only that big. And all the demands are streaming in. You will have to address, give us that input. What is your needs to cover that you want to cover? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. The concerns that Honorable De Beer has raised in terms of recruitment, I think I really support them. That we can't continue year in, year out complain about shortage of staff when we are having children that passes matric with university entrance qualification. And we don't compete in actually grabbing these children to study towards health professions. And they are taken by the IT, they are taken by the engineers in the built environment and all that. And then we continue and complain about shortage of staff, and we end up plunging the country to recruit staff from outside the country at exorbitant salaries and all that. And I think we need to really get out of our cocoons and do what is necessary and ensure that in the next 2-3 years we provide our own human resources that we have produced, we have financed in the form of bursaries or whatever. Chair, there are things that I just want to raise over and above that. One, when we talk about the allocations for compensation of employees from health, one understands that you're talking about your own staff. But we have time and again heard municipalities complaining that they are doing some of your responsibilities in the form of municipal clinics or whatever they call it, unmandated, whatever they call it. Now, and they are complaining that the Department of Health, either at national or province, is not even compensating them, but they are running those clinics and the rest. I just want to know whether you have heard about these particular complaints and whether there is any arrangements of trying to solve that, that we ensure that those clinics that are run by municipalities and then are getting the necessary assistance. And then the next issue is on the health infrastructure grant. On your breakdown over the MTF, I'm noticing that Limpopo and Mpumalanga in 2012-2013, the allocation is actually going down. What informs that? When Limpopo and Mpumalanga, it is really taken to be rural provinces where infrastructure it's not readily available, if not collapsing from the Bantustan rules that we had in these particular provinces. One would expect that more resources will be made available to actually ensure that the people have access to these services and to ensure that they are on par. Then the next issue is just a comment, Chair, on the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant. One is seeing that Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal are having serious allocations of resources, and I understand the reason that you have actually indicated to us. But at the end of the day is that the manner in which sometimes we allocate these resources, we must bear in mind that we don't actually induce migration of patients from other areas to those areas that they can provide these services continually because of the availability of resources. I think that's just what I just wanted to raise. Is while we may be responding to certain criteria that we are basing on these allocations, we must be wary about this particular aspect that we don't really create situations where people will move from Northern Cape because they cannot get a sustained service and move to Gauteng for them to be able to get the service. And unconsciously actually moving people from rural provinces to Gauteng and create further problems. The forensic pathology services. I understand that we are, you know, if we are intending to discontinue this specific grant from the next financial year. But the question that one needs to raise is, have we achieved what we wanted to achieve with this particular grant? Because if we have not achieved, when you put these resources in the same basket of equitable shares, in certain provinces, those funds will not find their way to deal with pathology services. We will go and build a reservoir or put water pipes that remains dry for the next 3 years because there is no bulk water services. Now, Chair, because a decision has been taken, I would propose that we get a detailed report on progress that has been achieved on this particular grant right through across all the provinces, and convince us that it is no longer necessary to ring-fence this fund. That's what I request on this specific chair. And the same thing applies to the hospital revitalization grant. I'll definitely request the same, chair, because the indication that I'm seeing is that in the year 2013-2014, there is an indication that there is a reduction on this particular grant. We're starting to reduce. We are saying that we are achieving our goals. But I know that Mapulaneng Hospital in Bushbuck Ridge, I think it received funds for revitalization some couple of years back. And that work, it looks like it has been completed. But 2 weeks back, I was there. And the water is getting into the building when it rains. And the roofing is also collapsing, especially on those buildings that they were not refurbished at that particular time. So, in other words, is that where we have undertaken the revitalization on the hospital 2-3 years back, are we having the requisite maintenance funds for those buildings? Because there is an indication that they have already started moving towards a situation that it needs revitalization again. How are we actually ensuring that we no longer get into this exorbitant costly revitalization, but we provide funds for maintenance and make sure that the maintenance happens continuously? Chair, there is this thing of a 5% withholding. I'm not understanding the 5% withholding on the transfer payments. And I'm not even a fan of withholding funds. I'm not even a supporter of that thing. And we are having a 3-year cycle of budgeting in South Africa. And we know the funds that are going to be transferred to specific agencies or organs of state. And while we cannot upfront deal with all challenges that would actually induce us to withhold funds, I'm not understanding it. Because we know that we are going to transfer funds to this particular department and they will need this for them to receive the funds in the next 3 years. There is no real convincing reason why all of a sudden then we can have a situation that warrants anybody to withhold funds. Because if we reach that particular point, that means even ourselves, the transferring agent, or whoever is monitoring those funds transferred, we have not done our part to ensure that where our money goes to will they actually pass into service delivery. We are caught with our pants down when our system of budgeting is a 3-year cycle or so that informs us what we need to be doing in 2013-2014, the amount that will be transferred at that time. We can start preparing that, make sure that all the play field is level and ready for those things to happen. And I'm really not a supporter of withholding any funds meant for service delivery. Now, Chair, the last one is the 5-7 April 2011 NASA Summit. What is new that you expect from that summit? Because all nurses will tell you that they are short staffed, they are overloaded. The nurses will tell you that they don't have equipment in the hospitals. And then the doctors are short. When they cry for the doctor is not available, it's not there. Maybe inform me, what is there that you expect that is new that we are going to hear from the nurses? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not going to repeat the issue of OSD recruitment, forensic pathologist is the same question which I wanted to ask. Now, the issue of 105 referrals, this nursing college, are you going to implement it countrywide, or you are going to prioritize it? Why I'm asking this question is because I want to know whether you will start from Province X, followed by Province X, something of one of the sort. The Kansan Hospital, the new hospital, the theater, when it's raining, it rains. They're still conducting operation and other things, or the switching at the old hospital. It needs to be visited to go and check what is the problem there. Thanks, Minister Chairperson.
Thanks for having members. Mimalvona, I'll request you to confine yourself only to questions. So don't worry much about comments. The comments will spare for when we deal with specific grants and public hearings. I can hear that the members are eager to venture into that terrain, but I'll request that we focus on the purpose of today. But we have recorded some of the concerns, and as we convene hearings on those specific public, grants, we'll then have enough time to discuss some of the grant-specific concerns and your need to visit and all of those. The floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the feedback from honourable members. I'm going to struggle, actually, Chair, to sift between the comments and the specific issues. But just overall, Chair, let me say that we would respectfully say that the policy of recruitment is within the mandate of higher education. And that policy is a policy problem for the country in the sense that they specify the total number of students that they can take for both first year, second year, and subsequent years. Because for purposes of supervision, when they train medical students, there's only a certain number, even for laboratories, there's only a certain number that can be accommodated. We're starting a project specifically for that, honorable member, at University of Witwatersrand. The minister will make an announcement soon in this respect to see how we are going to do it. In the sense that we do have a recruitment strategy. We do have a plan. But we need to work in consultation with the Department of Higher Education. It is for that reason that the minister has signed the service delivery agreement with the Minister of Higher Education for that purpose. The other comments and oversight, Chair, we will provide information as requested. We do have a comprehensive report, actually, which on a quarterly basis we prepare an overview of how the grants are performing and where the problem areas are and so on. We can give you the latest report and the third quarter report on the performance of each grant and what the status is. So this will be doing routinely so that we can be able to see where the performance areas are. More specifically, the questions raised about allocation for compensation of employees and with specific reference to municipalities. Chair, there is a government policy about provincialization. It's a policy that is very difficult to implement, largely because there's been a lot of legal challenges. And as we speak, there is another court battle in the Eastern Cape. And for that reason, the provincialization could have actually seen integration of health services, because you can't, in a country, and probably South Africa is unique in this regard, where you have primary health care rendered in two different settings. It's a very difficult issue because you can't, primary health care is supposed to provide for the promotion and prevention of health. And you need an integrated team of health promotion personnel, nurses, doctors. And we are trying to see how best we can integrate those services. We cannot have municipalities running services this way, and we must have an integrated approach. It's part of the reason that we have problems with achieving our goals of having primary health care in this country. It's because of these services that are not integrated. They've been fragmented in the past during apartheid days, they still are. And any attempts to try and provincialize have been subject to legal challenges. The first court case was won. The recent one is actually brewing in the Eastern Cape. We'll see what the outcome of that will be. The second chair about health infrastructure and particularly with regard to Limpopo and Mpumalanga, the health infrastructure grant chair is actually for existing grants. Treasury has actually just asked National to assist with what used to be provincial grants so that we can help speed up implementation, specifically because we've set up this facility where we've drawn in expertise from CSIR and DBSA. And they are helping us to move these grants and have better oversight. I actually have a separate presentation which we'll make, Chair, at an appropriate time when you invite us, when we discuss specific grant issues. The second, Chair, like I said, is to look at those. We have a report about the nursing colleges. There's a breakdown with regard to those colleges. There are those colleges that need minor refurbishments, and there are those that need complete overhaul. So we're going to break them down accordingly, and we already have a detailed report on how that will be. Part of the reason, Chair, there's always an argument that we need to reopen nursing colleges. And we wanted to correct that perception that what has been understood as the closure of nursing colleges is actually a consolidation. During the apartheid days, the nursing colleges were arranged according to different racial groups. So there was an integration and consolidation process of bringing them across. So some had to be closed down from that respect, not because they were sort of providing certain services. So what has since happened is that we've got services and we've got satellite arrangements. But the problem with that consolidation has been such that because less training must be in service, they've actually taken over some of the colleges that used to be education colleges, which are far from the service side. So we need to then consolidate all of that to bring, it actually forces nurses to travel kilometers to their training points. So we are correcting that, and this report of 105 is to correct that, to ensure that those that have minor problems, we fix them, and those that have to be revitalized completely are done, and those that have to be reorganized appropriately, we address them. But it's not just about the actual physical structures. It's also about the trainers themselves. We need to ensure that we've got a total number of trainers needed to help us produce the number of nurses we need. As it is, we've been told that we need to go on a recruitment drive. The Nursing Summit is supposed to help us do exactly that. We want South African learners to also choose nursing as a career of choice. So, because remember the effects of HIV/AIDS has also had an impact in people who want to go into the health field. So we want to revive recruitment so that we can encourage them so that they can be part of a health workforce of the future. The Gauteng and KZN, Chair, we've got a problem. The particularly Gauteng, We've done what we call an analysis of cross-border movement. Now, there are a lot of patients who come from Free State, for treatment in Gauteng. There are a lot of patients who come from Mpumalanga for tertiary services in Gauteng. Now, there are certain services that you do not have in Mpumalanga or Limpopo or Northwest. You have in tertiary institutions only. But for those patients, it would be difficult for Gauteng to claim, to send claims to Mpumalanga for reimbursement. So we need to work on a proper referral model because it puts a burden on Gauteng and KZN. KZN also has a flow of patients coming from Mpumalanga. So this cross-border movement, I think, are a challenge because they consume the resources of those other provinces because the referral system is still a problem. We've got a report, Chair, that makes reference to modernization of tertiary services, which we will share with you. This is supposed to be linked to the grants that relate to the training and also to tertiary services because we need an integrated approach in that regard. So we do have a total number of patients that are as a result of cross-border movement. But we've also done what we call a Zonai statistical modeling that shows you across the borders people who do not have access to their own province because the facilities are not closer. Facilities that are closer are actually in the accompanying province. Now, you can't say they can't go to that province. Yeah, so we have to be sensitive to ensuring that people can access care. And I think that is paramount. And then we make the movement of funds to be such that they allow for people to access facilities. So we actually have done an analysis looking at what the barriers are for people to access facilities. That includes roads. People can't access the ambulances, the movement of ambulances, for facilities and the time it takes for ambulances to go to facilities. We've done that, and we can share that information with you, Chair. The one about forensic pathology, we can provide a report with a breakdown for provinces so that we can see those provinces that have made progress and those provinces that are lagging behind. But there's been significant progress with regard to the building of mortuaries. We have a very detailed report that we'll share with you and we'll forward it in due course. For the hospital rewrite, equally I said we have quarterly reports. We can send you the most recent report of what the performance has been. But I'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, to say that maybe by way of background, since 1994 we've had 4,000, we have in a country 4,333 facilities. Of the 4,333 facilities, 41% of these were built post-1994, meaning 41% of the 4,333 facilities were built post-1994. The most important thing, Chair, is that we need to ensure that the performance of the grant should also be to revitalize what already exists. Because what has happened for the a number of facilities that have been built, because we were not doing what is called health facility planning, we've got facilities, particularly in Mpumalanga, that are 50% underutilized. Why? Because 50% of the facility is not fully equipped, or where it is equipped, the allocation of staffing has not been adequate. So the model that I was describing is such that we're looking at access problems, what that is doing to access and how best we can improve that. That's why we want this time around to ensure that instead of going to build more facilities, we should rather get the provinces to go and equip those facilities. That's the first thing. The second is that we've been very concerned about the maintenance of equipment, let alone buildings, but equipment. the replacement cost of some of the equipment is quite exorbitant. So what we have done, we need to have what we call the workshops in some of the hospitals. Now, we do not have those. So we've signed agreements with the technology universities to train clinical engineers and technicians who must be available to repair equipment that gets broken. You probably saw more recently, Chair, the reports in Gauteng. What we've done, we've actually gone back again to meet with clinicians in George Mukhari, Gauteng, Chris Banihara, and so on. And we set up what we call equipment committees. The reason we did that is because we've also recognized that the people who purchase equipment do not have a clue about what equipment needs to be done. They go, they buy whatever. So what we've done is set up these committees mainly to ensure that equipment that's bought is appropriate, and then we bring in these technicians to fix equipment that is broken so that we don't buy a new equipment when it can actually be fixed, because that has been the pattern. So we're trying to sort out not only maintenance for the buildings, but to sort out equipment share. On the question of withholding, I'll ask the CFO to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Members, thank you, DG. Member, we fully appreciate the concerns that were raised by the Select Committee earlier when we met last year regarding the withholding. So that is why we are not, the DORA is not proposing that we withhold 100% of the money that is due to be transferred. So it has reduced that withholding to only 5%. And the withholding has conditions in it. It says, while we are withholding, we need to assist the province and make interventions. Eventually, the money will be flowing down to the provinces. Should the interventions not happen within a particular financial year, National will request a rollover on behalf of that province based on concrete plans and commitments, where it indicates that there is capacity by the province to spend the money. But like the DG has already indicated, National has taken the responsibility to support the provinces to ensure that the approved projects, they move at the intended time frames. So the withholding is just a management tool that we are implementing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Are you ready, Maren? You ready? Mr. Kumalo, any quick view on health, nothing, man?
Yeah, no, I think not at this stage. I think when we deal with the specific, I don't know, there's one specific one that I might want to ask, but I think maybe it's something that I can discuss with the local department directly on the OSD and how it's actually treated.
Oh. Wendy?
Exactly the same issues that the FSC raised, how we deal with the OSD for health going forward and how the new changed equitable share formula or the health component will actually deal with that.
Okay. Thank you. So you will engage separately on that. Thank you very much. We will now take a human settlement. You are at liberty to stay and listen to your colleagues, otherwise you are excused.
Chair, I have to go to the World TB Day tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Have a safe one.
Thank you.
Thanks. That is, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my name is Nyamoko Bengo. I'm from Human Settlements. I'd like to submit an apology, Chair, for the Director General and the Minister. The Director General probably will be joining us a bit late. There is another presentation he was actually attending. I'm the acting CFO in the department. I must also apologize, Chair, for coming late. We just targeted the time where we are supposed to be presenting. If we knew, we would have actually been here at 9 o'clock in the morning. On the screen, Chair, we have the contents of the presentation, it looks at the purpose of the various programs of the department, the allocations to the program, the details of transfers and grants, and it looks at the main grant, the Human Settlement Development Grant, and it also looks at the allocations on that grant to various provinces, and it also looks at the principles applied in the allocation of the Human Settlement Development Grant. And after that, Chair, we also look at the Urban Settlement Development Grant, which is the new grant, and it also looks at the allocations as well as the overview in respect of that grant. The department has about 5 programs. The administration being program 1, housing policy, research and monitoring being program 2, housing planning and delivery support, which is program 3, which is a program where all the grants are housed, Chair. The purpose of that grant, if I can just zero it into it, is to support implementation and delivery, build capacity and liaise and communicate with stakeholders for effective housing human settlement programs, coordinate, monitor, and implementation of priority projects and sanitation programs. That grant is the main business of the department. Program 4 is where the funding is budgeted for. The funding, which is the all the grants are budgeted for, and the purpose of that program is to fund housing and human settlement development programs, provide financial and grant management services, promote investment in housing finance, mobilize and promote financial probity within housing institutions, as well as manage all matters provided for by the Home Loans, Mortgage and Disclosure Act. In terms of the allocation to the department, Chair, the total allocation in the first year is 22.5 billion, and it's spread across all the programs, as I've already indicated. You'll notice, Chair, that the biggest allocation goes to the fourth program, which is housing development finance. That's where all the grants and transfer payments to public entities are actually housed, Chair. In the first year, the total is 21.995 billion. In the second year, it's 24.2 billion. And in the third year, it's 25.9 billion. That slide check is the same allocation, but based on economic classification. You'll notice, Chair, that the transfers and subsidies take a bigger portion of our allocation right through the MTF period. That check gives details of transfers and grants, the biggest, Chair, being the Human Settlement Development Grant, which is at 14.9 billion in the first year of the MTF, 15.5 billion in the second year, and it goes up to 16.4 billion in the outer year. The Housing Disaster Relief Grant, Chair, was introduced by Treasury 2 years ago in respect of KZN, and it was only for 2 years, and it has run its course, and the current financial year is its last year. So moving forward into the new MTF period, there is no allocation for that grant. It was intended to address disasters in the KZN province 2 years ago. The rest here is transfers to various public entities of the, under the department, the Social Housing Foundation, which is also on its way out. It's in the process of being closed down by the department. Hence, there is the last allocation in 2011-2012. These allocations to the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the Rural House Housing Loan Fund, the Housing Development Agency, the National Urban Reconstruction and Housing Agency, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, which is and that portion is being the capital restructuring grant for social housing. The next one, Chair, which is the second biggest grant, is the Urban Settlement Development Grant. This Chair, is a new grant which we will be managing with effect from next financial year. We'll refer to it later in the presentation. Then the last one, Chair, is the Rural Household Infrastructure Development Grant, which is getting $231 million in the first year, $479 in the second year, and $517 in the last year of the MTF period. The Human Settlement Development Grant, Chair, is the biggest grant the department is managing. It is transferred to provinces. And on the screen gives an indication of how the allocations have been given to various provinces. The Eastern Cape will be getting $2.1 billion in the first year, 2011-2012. $2.274
billion
in the second year.
I ask you not to read them one by one, like negative health.
All right. And the total allocation, Chair, for the first year of the MTF is $14.9 billion, and the total allocation in the next financial year is $15.5 billion, and the last allocation in the outer year is $16.45 billion. You will notice, Chair, that Gauteng gets a bigger portion of the allocation because of the housing need in that province. That is also impacted a lot, Chair, by migration, particularly in light of the fact that people are looking for job opportunities in Gauteng.
But people still move.
And then the principles applied here to the Human Settlement Development Grant in the allocations is that an amount equal to 15% of the Human Settlement Development Grant was allocated as a contribution to the establishment of the Urban Settlement Development Grant. In the past, Chair, there used to be a grant called MIG for cities. That grant was managed by the Department of Cooperative Governance, CoopTA. Cabinet took a decision that funding should move over to human settlements. And Treasury also proposed that a certain portion of the Human Settlement Development Grant be merged into that grant to enhance that grant. So as a result, a portion amounting to 15% of the Human Settlement Development Grant was therefore sliced off and then merged with the new grant in order to enhance that grant so that it can also be more effective. The second issue, Chair, is that in order to ensure national development priority programs are funded, the Human Settlement Development Grant was also split into two portions, a 20% and an 80%. This, Chair, was a decision taken by MINMEC. The intention is to ensure that we target areas of great need and that all the national priorities are actually adequately addressed and funded. The third item, Chair, the principal, Chair, was that the 20% portion was allocated by the National Department to provinces for priority development programs, while the 80% was allocated to provinces based on an approved formula. And that formula, Chair, looks, among other things, mainly at the housing need across the country in various provinces, particularly being guided by Stats SA figures. Another principle, Chair, is that the National Development Priority Programs, which I have already mentioned before, are based on the Outcome 8 Delivery Agreement, which were concluded between the President,
the minister, and human settlement and provincial MECs. Chair, as we know that the country has adopted the outcomes-based approach in performance, human settlements being outcome 8, it has got outputs, and those outputs are targeted using the 20% portion of the grant. So I need to ensure, Chair, that we do achieve the outcomes as set out on the delivery agreements signed by the principals. The next principle, Chair, is that the National Development Priority Programs are the following: informal settlement upgrading, rental and social housing, land, and special national priority projects. The Urban Settlement Development Grant, Chair, is the new grant which we will be managing moving forward from the next financial year. The funding for that grant will be transferred directly to metropolitan municipalities, and the allocations to those municipalities are as indicated, Chair, on the screen. With respect to the Eastern Cape, Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City municipalities will be receiving those allocations, Chair, giving Eastern Cape a total of 926 million. Free State will be getting 411, Chair. Gauteng, the total of 3 billion is split between those three metropolitan municipalities, Joburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane. KZN, only Thekwini will be getting that amount of 1 billion. And then in the Western Cape, Cape Town will be getting 824. The total allocation in the first year, Chair, is 6.2 billion, increasing to 7.4 in the second year and 8.1 billion in the outer year. Just an overview, Chair, on the Urban Settlement Development Grant. It's a newly established grant which comprises a mix of funds from Human Settlements Development Grant, as I've already indicated, Chair. Treasury also put more, and cooperative governance, which was the old grant which they previously were managing. This grant is the Schedule 4 grant, and it is intended to respond to the urban built environment development needs in towns and cities. The needs include park and lead infrastructure, socio-economic infrastructure, and the eradication of basic services. Provision to poor and low-income households. The intention, Chair, is to really target bulk infrastructure needs in the country, because in a number of cases what we have noticed is that housing development is indeed frustrated by lack of infrastructure, bulk infrastructure. It also allows for acquisition of well-located land. It must be used as a supplementary fund to existing municipal and provincial funds for eradication of poverty and inequality. So in respect of the metropolitan municipalities to which it will be going, they should have a complete plan, and this grant will be supplementing to them the already existing funding they have. That, Chair, gives, in a nutshell, details of the main grants the department will be managing. Thank you, Chair.
Well, one of the ideas behind this urban grant instead of rural settlement development grant, I'm asking in the context of the fact that we are saying we want to develop our rural areas. But here you come as Human Settlement, you've got a grant that is going to basically improve our cities, our metros, so to speak. So I just want to understand the logic behind that. in that context. Honourable members, I'm going to be a little bit strict on time this time around. You will each have 3 minutes within which to raise your questions. Honourable De Pierre, and in that order.
General, just a short one. You refer to you rely on the figures given by Stats South Africa. How old is this statistics you are working on? Referring to page 5 at the bottom. Based on an approved formula. And then you said you're working on the statistics or the figures of Stats South Africa, because that is very old figures.
Thanks, Chairperson. I am just interested to hear on the housing disaster relief grant that has been discontinued, and reason being that it was meant for KZN. Now, I just want to know if that is being discontinued. What's going to happen with other disasters that have been happening across on this on people's houses? How are we going to respond if that is just, because one would have understood that the terms of reference for that specific grant would have changed now to cover the whole country. But now, if it is discontinued, how do we respond? In Mpumalanga, we had something that reached people's houses. And how do you respond to that? Then the next question, Chair, is the Human Settlements Development Grant allocation to provinces. I really just want to know as well logistical arrangements for really ensuring that these amounts that are going to be allocated to deal with are going to be implemented without problems of withholding funds. I still want to restate, Chair, even for health, that I continue not to be a supporter of withholding funds, no matter what good reason. I'm not a supporter of that. People must just be clear that there are other arrangements. Now, with human settlements for 2011-2012, the amount that has been allocated, and then to ensure that all logistical arrangements, there is readiness to implement that without coming to us on the fourth quarter and tell us that, you know, this money could not be spent, we have withheld because there is no capacity, there is no business plan, there is all these sorts of things. How ready is this department to make sure that this thing happens? Thanks, Chairperson.
Trips of your roots in Mpumalanga.
Well, Chair, I think about 2-3 weeks, and then it has been on our TVs that we had a couple of houses around Songwe that have been ripped through. But also, Chair, on top of that,
yeah, by what? I wanted to know. Is that the thing? I want the name of the thing.
Well,
the Mpumalanga, so many things have happened. Maybe
no, there was a storm, Chair. That went through.
Okay. No.
Yes. And the same in Northwest, I think we have had the queries about that with housing Northwest and Northern Cape.
Okay.
And then, but now you have the disaster relief grant that was meant for KZN, now discontinued without any other arrangement to respond to similar things. That's what I'm just raising.
Okay. Now there is something for that, but let the department answer.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to urban as against rural, within the housing code of the department, there is a program for rural housing. provinces are actually using to fund housing development in the rural areas. This grant was specifically just intended to target urban areas because of the need, of the housing need emerging, particularly around infrastructure development. Because what happens in the rural areas is that the infrastructure in place is very critical as far as housing development is concerned. So the need was to target bulk infrastructure because it's bulk infrastructure mainly which really delays and frustrates housing development in the urban areas. But that does not in any way mean that the department or the sector is ignoring the housing need in the rural areas. There is a program which provinces are actually using. That program is funded by the Human Settlement Development Grant. With regard to the Hawaii Disaster Grant in the KZN, there is also a program within the Human Settlement Development Grant. There is a program which is called the Housing Emergency. Program. That program is actually intended to assist in areas of emergency where there is a disaster, either be it a storm or any kind of a disaster. It only provides, though, for temporary shelter for people at that time. That program continues here. It is implemented by programs. By provinces. The only challenge with KZN at that time, it was the extent of the disaster whereby Treasury decided that they should give this additional allocation. But within the Human Settlement Development Grant, there is funding and there is a program for emergencies, which is funded by the grant. Regarding to readiness, Chair, the Human Development Grant is transferred to provinces, and we receive business plans for them. Every year, we make sure that we get the business plans from the provinces before we start the financial year. We are not likely to come and say there is a problem in the middle of the year that there is a problem with the business plans. But what is the challenge we have currently, Chair, is for provinces to submit plans on time so that we can have enough time to analyze them and liaise with them and advise, and where there is a need, come together and agree on various issues. That's the main challenge, and it's a challenge which always happens at the beginning of the year, whereby provinces will tend to submit maybe in the last minute or very late. As we are talking right now, Chair, we have written letters to the provinces to again remind and push and try and sort of get them to submit correct plans. There are plans they have submitted. We have analyzed them. We are not happy with a number of issues. We have sent them letters to say, we need you to correct these. We need you to clear these. And so that we can be ready when April comes. We have also requested a meeting with Treasury, Chair, to actually talk to them about this very same issue. If it happens, we don't think it will, but if it happens that provinces don't respond on time, up until the time when we have to transfer grants, we need Treasury to assist us. And actually, yes, if possible. We wouldn't like to do it, but we would like them to be with us and advise us. And I agree, Chair, that withholding of the grant to provinces, it creates a dilemma with the provinces because there are contracts in place and there is housing development taking place, and when
when funds are withheld, it creates various problems and for the provinces. We wouldn't like to do that. And hence, we spend more time following up and pushing provinces to submit all the necessary so that we can be in a position where even ourselves, we comply with the Division of Revenue Act. I'll just allow my colleagues, maybe they have got one or two things they want to add.
Chair, if I may. Thank you very much. Chair, not repeating what the acting CFO had indicated, let me just also add that there is a project management unit that has been established in the Director General's office. The purpose of that unit is to particularly look at the business plan issues that have been raised and the challenges that the provinces had actually indicated in their reports per quarter or the annual. And the idea behind that is to have a dedicated team to make a follow-up on those issues and come up with sort of developed programs that would actually liaise with programs, the provinces directly, and engage on those issues in particular. In essence, we're trying to say we are going to give our focus directly to provinces in such a way that we avoid issues of stopping and reallocation at the end of the period. Although we do not, correctly like the acting CFO indicates, that we do not support, but we find ourselves being compelled to reallocate money to those provinces that are in dire need of funds at that particular period, rather than for us to lose money to other sectors because the committee would understand that at the end of the period, sometimes even if you request a rollover, you do not actually get it given the circumstances of the economy of the country. So if one actually has to also indicate that we are engaging in a tour to look at the state of readiness of the projects that the provinces will submit together with the business plans that the acting CFO has indicated to determine whether the money that we set or they indicated in their plans that they would actually allocate to those projects, there is sort of a state of readiness on that one. And I think perhaps to just as well indicate to the committee that the reports that we have received from provinces, we've actually identified some of the key problems that actually require the attention of the department rather than those that cut across, and we will actually engage on those and look forward to come up with a program that will assist provinces in the event of them seeking attention. Chair, I think perhaps to also add on the fact that the Stats SA figures that we had used as far as the allocation formula is concerned, we have a unit that actually liaises with our Statistics South Africa to get the latest figures. So the current figures that we use, particularly on that, because of the fact that they were not actually, given to us in 2010, we used the 2009 figures from the Stats SA so far.
Thank you very much. I think that's all from Human Settlements. But personally, I don't agree. Maybe this is something that we'll take up with Treasury and continue to debate, including the FFC. You see, I don't agree with this notion that because Province A cannot spend money, then therefore they don't have a dire need for that fund. It must go to another one. It's also a matter of capacity, because every province, particularly these small ones, they are in dire need for money than any other province, but they lack capacity. That's my personal view. So until we address the issue of capacity in those particular provinces or municipalities, then we'll never address this thing. At the same time, I think Rekumalo and Ms. Van is the issue relating to what exactly we are trying to do when you talk of rural development, but at the same time, moving with high speed to develop metros and cities. And at the same time, talking about immigration from the small provinces to those big ones. To me, and maybe some kind of a research needs to be done here, because I'm of the view that in the past, people used to be attracted to cities by job opportunities. But now, people are attracted to big cities by opportunities like, I know if I move to Gauteng, I will within no time have my own house than if I will stay in my province in Northwest. You see? Now, people are attracted to these provinces because they've got a lot of money, they've got a lot of improvements, they will get houses quicker. If you are frustrating this development of urban settlements and neglecting rural development, because I'm told that the reason why we need to develop rural areas is to also attract investment, have all these services there, the infrastructure, so that it can be attractive and easy for people to come and invest. It will also fast track how commodities move from one point to another. But I think the pace within which we are moving in terms of is not balanced. And it's not also speaking to our efforts to see us. It's like, to me, we are just talking rural development, but when it comes to the release of resources, they speak to metros and cities than this challenge of... because I would argue that if we can seriously put more money in, let's take Eastern Cape for an example, and say it's a rural province, develop Eastern Cape, build houses there, put infrastructure there and everything, that will attract investment. A lot of these big companies will go and invest in the Eastern Cape. And people will never move to Gauteng. You go to Pretoria, that Pretoria itself is a lot of people from all other provinces. Attracted there, one, by job opportunities, you understand. But at the same time, in Gauteng, now people are attracted because of all these facilities. There's a lot of facilities, sporting facilities, arts and culture facilities. You get all these facilities concentrated in one area. Why can't we move those facilities to this area so that we keep... It will also solve this other problem of migration and all those things. But I think that is a debate for... It will have to be a continuing debate between ourselves and relevant departments. I'm not expecting some answers now. Rekumalo, you've got your 3 minutes, and Ms. Fanny, you have your 3 minutes before we take Public Works. May I request the presenter from Public Works to come to this chair here?
Yeah, no, Chair, I think I just want to respond, maybe a preliminary response to the issue around the withholding and also the shifting from the one province that's not spending to the other. I think if you want to think about then what actually it forms that particular position, at a point where you had money that was sitting in some of these provinces and doing nothing, and all you get is like at the end of the year, money has not been spent, money has been transferred and it's not been spent, but some provinces were spending far much faster than others. And now if you take the division of revenue bill itself as simply an allocation mechanism, it probably made sense at that particular time to make that recommendation. But now, because we're focusing more on the outcomes, what is it that must actually be done, I think it puts a little bit more responsibility on the transferring departments to actually ensure that the spending does take place, because the responsibility is up there. And therefore, the capacity issue that you find in a province has to be addressed by the national department itself, that capacity building issue. And that is why at some point we spoke about when you put this grant, you must also set aside some portion of it to address the capacity issues within a province. So we still are of the view that if each sphere of government is actually carrying out its responsibilities effectively, this whole issue should disappear. It shouldn't be. It should be an exception. It should not be a trend that you actually find yourselves having to move money from the one province to the other because of capacity problems. Because if we are addressing capacity, you have to build it, and once you've built it, it's there. It should not be an issue that becomes part and parcel of the process. So it's really about people exercising the responsibilities as assigned in the constitution. So that's the one issue. The other issue that you're talking about around the urban development versus the rural development, I think maybe the context must be understood in terms of the grants. What are the grants that we are actually talking about? And once you understand the concept, what the grants are that you are referring to, maybe the discussion, I was actually earlier having a discussion with Wendy, that there's a danger that the focus, because we have actually made these changes to the grants, you then find yourself shifting people's focus into these because they are big. And the other grants that you left for the rural dimension are small.
Mm.
And, you know, when everybody talks about the role of the cities and development, and so there's obviously there's that discussion that is taking place out there that can easily outweigh the imperative on the rural dimension, and I think that's something that we will talk about probably when we talk about the specific grants themselves, how one strikes that balance. I think it's an important discussion. I agree with you.
Anu?
Thank you. Just three quick points. The first one deals with some of the issues raised with regard to the disaster management and how it's dealt with. There's various responses and various grant flows for disaster management. There's the funds that flow immediately after disaster. An example was given of the program that the Department of Human Settlements has got. But that's for immediate disaster responses. If you look at disaster for the longer-term rehabilitation, that is part of the normal budget process. So what you will be seeing is that a conditional grant will be coming and a conditional grant will be going because it's specifically made available for the refurbishment of a disaster that's already happened. How the process actually works is that the submission is made to the National Disaster Management Unit, which is located with the Department of Cooperative Governance. Then there's a committee that actually sits, look at the disaster request, look at how it will be funded, how much is that directly attributable to the disaster, how much is just normal infrastructure that needs to be fixed because disaster management funds can't be used for just normal infrastructure expenditure as well. And that then forms part of the normal budget. In some cases it will be human settlements, in other cases it will be transport, in other cases it will be linked to agriculture. So the where the grants appear is linked also to what type of infrastructure needs to be put in place. And it's also then some of the funds are allocated to provinces because it's provincial functions, in other cases it's the cases with municipalities, for example the fixing of municipal roads. So those grants, there's a multiple number of grants. But having said that, the whole disaster management funding issue is actually being reviewed as well to make it more streamlined and function better. So the first reform that's been introduced is this immediate release, which we've taken you through, which is to deal with the cost related 3 days to 3 months after disasters occurred. Then with regard to the second issue about grant spending, agreed also with what both the Department of Human Settlements has said, as well as what the FSC says, that the key focus should be on building the capacity of provinces to spend those monies. And then lastly, it's an issue, and I think it really requires quite a lot of debate as well. The first thing is you need a differentiated approach because the urban formula will not work to deal with rural development needs. Development in both areas are important, and the one shouldn't be to the detriment of the other one. They should actually be mutually complementary, and that's what needs to be achieved. For example, with regard to roads, in the rural context, you need access to markets. In respect of particularly large urban areas, you need integrated or public transport to get you from point A to your location, much denser public transport needs. The same applies to economic development. The areas that you target in the urban areas are generally very different to what is appropriate for rural areas. And what is definitely important is that, yes, the fiscal fiscal system has been amended to respond to the different needs. You get a rural transport grant, you get a rural infrastructure household grant, also with the Department of Human Settlements. But the spending on those programs are very low, which is a huge concern. So the reforms have been introduced, but it's not matched with actual expenditure. So it won't really add any value to even add more money when the current money in the system is actually not being spent. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Dati, and your team. And you are at liberty to stay, or otherwise you are excused. We will now take the last presentation from the Department of Public Works. May I explain to you what we explained to other departments earlier on? Because actually this meeting was closed a long time ago when there was no department. We will appreciate in future when we invite you, particularly in this committee, in the NCOP. You don't come, if the meeting starts at 9, you expect everybody to be there at 9. Irrespective of whether you present at 12 or at 11. We make an exception only for ministers. The reason being, our programs are not cut in stone. We can change it at any given time. And also the time allocated is just an estimated time. If it happens that the department uses 5 minutes of the 30 minutes, we cannot, after that presentation, wait for an hour and wait for somebody to come at 12. I'm just explaining this because next time you'll come in and you'll find and be told that the meeting was closed long time ago. And you'll have to explain to your principals why. Otherwise, we'll also follow up with a letter that you did not pick up. So I'm just saying, the issue of program is mainly, we only release it for ministers if they are coming, so that they join us close to that particular time. But we expect the department officials to be there at the beginning of the meeting. I hope that I'm just clarifying that for the future. You have 20 minutes to make your presentation.
I won't even introduce the delegation. Maybe just to mention that actually we tried to, this is, we've been to the meeting of SCOA, which we just could not separate the two meetings. It got delayed. We got delayed longer than we thought we would be presenting at 11 o'clock. So we would have been here at 9 o'clock, but we had a meeting that we were called to with the standing committee. We apologize for that. We just couldn't separate the two meetings. My name is Lydia Vicky. I'm the acting COO. I must apologize for the acting DG who could not be here. The CFO, Casey Motsisi, will be making the presentation for us. We have Rahad Samuel, who is the DDG Inner City. We have the DDG Itajamuki, Stanley Henderson. We have Adam Tombeni, the Chief Director, Intergovernmental Relations. We have Ignatius Orio, the Chief Director, Infrastructure in EPWP. Thank you for the opportunity. CFO will make the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, I'll start my presentation with the devolution of property rates grant. Expenditure is at February. Looking at the slides there, what we are reflecting is expenditure of almost 70% as at the end of February. We've noted a significant improvement in terms of spending, starting from the 2008-2009 when we started implementing the devolution of property rates.
KwaZulu-Natal is reflecting a 45% expenditure, which I can safely say, as of last week, they reported increased spending of almost 70%. This has changed the picture. We couldn't change this figure because this is the presentation that we sent earlier to the committee, but we wanted to confirm that we have received evidence that that expenditure is now sitting on 70%. Of great concern is the looming over expenditure Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and Eastern Cape, including Free State, where they are already on 99, 92, and 91%. We have requested them to be very vigilant to ensure that they don't experience any unauthorized expenditure. I have also included the budget for 2011-12 on the same slide so that you can be able to see the budget as it stands currently, adjusted by 700 million in August from 1.8 billion next year, the next financial year, where the budget will be 1.8. Given the rate of expenditure as it is reflected here, it is clear that the grant might not be adequate. I've also included a slide just to show graphically expenditure versus budget over a three-year period since the commencement of the property rates grant. If you look at 2008-2009 initial stages where the budget was just below a billion, expenditure was still very low. But in 2009-10, expenditure increased as the budget increased also. To 2010-11, we are seeing again quite a commendable increase in terms of expenditure. The expenditure will increase as and when the municipalities identify new properties that were never rated before. The next three bars shows the MTEF allocation up to 2013-14 in terms of the budget that has been allocated. If expenditure for 2010-11 actually reaches the peak, we might have to request adjustments for the 2011-12. Free State and Limpopo have already indicated a shortfall, and they are already on the 99%, a shortfall of approximately 50 million that will be required for the current year. Clearly, it shows that they will need additional funding allocated for the new financial year. This slide just shows the same six-year period, but giving the detail in terms of each and every province. I've highlighted the past period, 2008-09, and the current one in blue, and the projections in terms of the figures for the outer years. Expenditure growth over a three-year period. This is how the grant has performed over the three-year period. Clearly, you can see that provinces like Eastern Cape, where at the end of March they were on 52%, now at the end of February they are already on 91%, showing a tremendous improvement in terms of how they have worked closely with municipalities to ensure that they build them for the properties belonging to them, including KZN, where they are now actually working closely with their provincial treasury to help the municipalities to generate the invoices so that they can pay. Mpumalanga has also performed exceptionally well, including Limpopo, where March 10, they were on 37%, and now at the end of February, they are on 97%, which shows the drive that has been implemented by the provinces to ensure that they assist the municipalities in invoicing on time. Going to the EPWP incentives, provincial departments in 7 out of the 9 provinces have been able to access the EPWP infrastructure sector incentives. 1.85 million will be paid out of the 330 million available for the 10-11 financial year for the third quarter reporting. This represents 56% of the provincial allocation. Only the Northern Cape and Northwest provinces have not accessed their incentive allocation for the 10-11 financial year. For municipalities, 273 million of the 622 million will be paid for the third quarter reporting. This represents 44%
of the municipal allocation for the 10-11 financial year. The overall infrastructure incentive allocation of 459 million, 48% has been accessed. This is just a picture of the various provinces in terms of the infrastructure incentive allocation for 10-11, third quarter payments, and the amounts that have been disbursed, and the percentages disbursed. Overall, this shows disbursements of about 56%. EPWP incentives to municipalities, this is the further breakdown in terms of each province, in terms of what was allocated for incentives, the third quarter incentive payment that was due. We've disbursed almost 273 million, representing 44% of the disbursements that have been made to date. We've noted as a department the slow spending on the incentives as represented by the 44% and the 56%. And as a department, measures have been put in place to assist municipalities and provinces to access the grants faster than the way they are accessing it currently. Public bodies are being provided with support to report to EPWP. This was also demonstrated by the 90 data capturers that we employed that have been seconded to these municipalities and provinces to assist them with capturing the data so that they can timely report on to National for us to release the incentives. There is also a partnership with DBSA through the Sienzamanje program that we put in place to bring in more partnership into capacitating the municipalities and the provinces to access the grants. There is also training of officials in municipalities where we've partnered with the LG CETA to train the municipalities and the provinces to be able to understand the model, the approach, be able to implement labor-intensive methods so that they can also access the grants. Technical support is being provided also to public bodies to implement their project more labor-intensively so as to create more work opportunities and full-time equivalents that will increase the incentive drawn down. As a department, I must proactively report that we have noted the slowness that is attributable to capacity within municipalities. And we are continuously assessing the situations and looking at different models, different ways that at national level, how we can actually intervene to make sure that some of the municipalities that are not performing as expected are capacitated. This is the EPWP incentive grant to provinces for social sector. The budget allocation of EPWP incentive grants to provinces for the social sector was 56.6 million, and the total allocation has been fully transferred to provinces in line with the payment schedule. The transfer payment was scheduled as a once-off payment and was transferred in August. Treasury expenditure report for EPWP incentive grants to provinces for social sector shows that provinces have paid 26.2 million to provinces, with Eastern Cape, Free State, and Western Cape not having spent the allocation. This is more the breakdown now in terms of numbers per province on the social sector grant, where out of the 56.6 million that we have transferred, actual payments to the social sector is 26 million, representing a 47% expenditure. This is the allocated budget for the MTEF. We are not able to show the outer years as the incentives are based on the performance of the various provinces. We have our allocation for 2011-12 broken down as stated above in terms of what is earmarked for incentives for each province. This is the EPWP incentives to provinces for social sector 2011-12 to 2014. The total there shows the fact that we've got the baseline in terms of what is going to be allocated. What we cannot do currently is to stratify this according to the various provinces. I think this concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mamuti. Members, if there are any questions,
Honorable Chair, no, thank you. It's quite disturbing to see the province that I come from, Northern Cape. They have not accepted the incentive allocation. Did you inquire what is the reason? Because I'm going to phone the MEC after this meeting. What's going on here? On page 5, at the top, the slide at the top, only the Northern Cape and Northwest provinces have not accessed the incentive allocation for 2010-2011 financial year. Then the slide at the bottom, the zero, it's a matter of concern. That's one of the priorities of government. The question is, did the department follow this up? What was the outcome of that follow-up?
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 2, the presenter indicated that the KwaZulu-Natal was 45%, now it's standing at 70. Why such a big jump at a short time? And then number 3, I'm seeing the report here, the budget growth over a 6-year period. You are having at the 208.09, 12.2, okay, we come to 209.10, 19, then it goes down there on the month to 15, then 34.35. Why this fluctuation? Number 5, I'm not going to ask, as the Honorable De Beer has asked that. Page 7. Page 7, bullet 2, the Treasury Expenditure Report, the EWP, the Incentive Grant to Provinces and Social Sectors. This 26 million to provinces in the Free State and Western Cape not having spent that. Did the department ask them or the reason why they didn't spend this allocation? Number last is only for sake of clarity. Why this conditional grant is going to be allocated towards the end of the financial year? Thanks.
Chair, I'll respond to the devolution questions, and my colleagues then will respond to the EPWP questions. The KZN jump from the 45% to 70% is largely attributable to the slow submission of invoices by the municipalities, and that is why they've already roped in the provincial treasury to assist them in assisting the municipalities to start billing so that they can pay. They are actually personally going to those municipalities to assist to get the invoices so that they can pay. And I think that is what actually resulted with the high drive since January. The Limpopo fluctuation is largely attributable to the fact that initially Limpopo was not performing at all. They were not paying their property rates. They had serious challenges with the municipalities who did not have billing systems, who did not have a proper... who did not have valuation roles on some of the properties. And with the improvement in the administration, they are now beginning to show improvement. In the year where the amount went down to 15%, if you look at expenditure was very low, and the budgets were reduced. In 2009,
they spent 56%, it went down to 37%, and now they are on 97%. So the budget went down at a time when they were not spending at all, but they have since improved tremendously in terms of spending. My colleagues will take the three on the provinces that were not submitting.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the Honourable Member's question with regard to slide on page 5, rather. Yeah. The reason we just have to understand the different grants, how it works. In case of the infrastructure sector, that is a performance-based grant, which means provinces have to report on what they have done, and then based on reports that they have received, funding will be released. In the case of the provinces where we have under expenditure, like on page 5, we as a department, we do indeed engage directly with the relevant departments. The funding, it flows from us to the provincial treasury, and they have to submit reports and draw down against those. And what we have found is that in many cases there will be a lack of capacity to implement labor intensively, which means even though funding will be available, it is not because they don't have the capacity to implement labor intensively. Many times there will be a slow implementing of programs and projects, hence the lack of a drawdown against the published figures. And we certainly engage those departments directly and to bring it to their attention. And what we do from our side, we also assist in terms of the with technical support to ensure that programs and projects are designed in such a fashion that they will be able to deliver on that.
The gentleman there, your intervention, did it actually take place, and what was the result?
Yes, in the case of Western Northern Cape, we have, for instance, deployed data capturers to enable them to report on the figures, what has happened in the provinces. And we also conduct regular labor intensive or workshops on labor intensity. Yes, the interventions have taken place on the remember. Are you done? I think there was a question with regard to the social sector incentives that I perhaps just briefly engage. We have engaged with the DGs of the relevant departments with regard to the social sector. This is a particular grant that speaks to the own community-based care program, HCBC, and we have engaged with them to ensure that proper implementation will take place. But that is the social sector grant, Chair, that is a primary grant, which means it goes directly from national treasury to the provincial treasury and treasuries for the relevant departments in the provinces. We implement the own community-based care grant.
If that is all, you see, I'm tempted to ask to make a follow-up on certain things, but I'm afraid I will not be relevant. but I just want maybe we do as a committee have some serious concerns with a number of things, performance-wise, with regard to public works. And we have struggled last year to get you to appear before this committee. There's been even complaints from other departments about some of the things that you're supposed to do for them, like the Department of Health, for example. So we are still going to convene a meeting where we'll invite provinces and all other departments. But I think we'll write direct to the minister, because there's a tendency in public works of not honoring meetings. I must be open with yourself. We saw it happening last year. The last time this committee, public works attended our meetings was in 2009, towards the end. Stan, you were there. That was the last time, yes. Yeah, that was the last time we saw you until today. It's a miracle that he even turned up. But I'm saying we are going to, outside of dealing with the division of revenue, we will be convening some hearings, and you are top on our list. So I'm just saying well in advance, May, that we would appreciate if you could come, but we'll also formalize that and request the presence of the minister. At the time we wanted you mostly, it was during that regime change where the minister was changed and all those things and all those things. And immediately thereafter we went for December recess. So, but I'm sure in April we'll call you, and then we'll engage further on some of the things that have been raised here, on the devolution of property rates and as well as the EPW. So I will reserve my comments for that particular period so that I'm relevant. I'm not sure if there is anything that Mr. Kumalo you'd want to say, or Mrs. Fanu, on the presentation.
Yeah, no. From my side, I what I want to say is that I would very much like to be part of that discussion when you bring the department, because I think last year we did have a bit of an engagement with them through the standing committee on appropriations, and I can, when I'm looking at these numbers, I still see the same kind of a problem that we had identified, and I think we need to, and it would be interesting if we also have the National Treasury at that particular point so that we can discuss, because we are of the view that the design of these grants is problematic.
Thank you very much. Agree that some of the EPWP grants, particularly the instances, two types of grants, and actually see, you know, how the two different systems work, where it fails, where it succeeds, and how we can actually learn from the lessons that we've learned to actually reform the system going forward to get the accelerated expenditure. Then with regard to the property rights devolution grant, just a few issues there that I think is important as well. The first issue is that the municipal billing. There's capacity constraints in certain municipalities to get the bills in place as well, and actually then to start billing. But there's also another problem that provinces need to deal with, and that's why you get some of this erratic spending. Some municipalities will bill monthly, some will bill half yearly, and others will bill annually. And it's determined in terms of municipal policy. So what you'll get is some municipalities bill annually, and that's why suddenly you see this huge jump in allocation. And although we've tried to discuss it with municipalities as well to actually get a more formalized way in terms of, in a similar way to bill provinces, they weren't really willing to look at it because they say it's in terms of municipal policy. So So that erratic nature will continue. It's actually for provinces then to know when the bills are going to come in, and actually, but therefore, and to get that, you need an expenditure trend of past history to inform those decisions. So it's agreed that in order to determine the full amount needed, we need all municipalities to bill, and we need to know when they bill, and that's in order to address these problems. And that's the specific reason why the conditional grant has actually been established. That conditional grant will only be incorporated into the equitable share when we know the full expenditure responsibilities that provinces need to maintain in this regard. And that's the reason why there's a conditional grant in place specifically for this purpose. And only after the full property rights burden that provinces, each and every province must deal with, will it be incorporated into the equitable share, which is not known at this stage, as you can see from the report submitted.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fanu, honourable members, I think we have come to an end of today's presentations. The Department of Basic Education would not be coming, as I indicated earlier on. So this was the last presentation. May I take this opportunity to thank you for coming and honoring this invitation. And we hope to interact with yourself, Department of Public Works, into the future, and like I said, we targeting to meet with you again towards the mid or late April. No, we don't have April, in fact, because we've got only 1 week as Parliament into April, so maybe it will be immediately after the elections, towards the end of May or early June, but proper communication will be served. And with nothing to discuss further, this meeting stands adjourned, and you are invited to finger lunch there at the back. Thank you very much.